Hey, fans of the arcane, here's Jay Williams back again with an update on my two obsessions, typewriters and change ringing. And I'll start with typewriters. I recently acquired a Noiseless, and this isn't made by Remington or Underwood. This is the original Noiseless, made by the Noiseless Typewriter Company. And this is a standard office model from the late teens or early 20s. I haven't found a serial number yet, but it's Model 4, so it could be anywhere from 1917 to about 1923. And as with other Noiseless machines, the type bars thrust straight out toward the platen, and they don't really run into it. They are pushed against it. There's a weight at the other end of the type bar that it's like a piano hammer. It aims toward the string, and the action only pushes it just so far, and then it rides on its own momentum and sort of runs into, rather than smashes against or slams against, the platen. This is a very cool looking machine. It's all enclosed. It's supposed to be noiseless, so the sides aren't open as with many machines of this era, so it's a beautiful thing. Very satiny finish, and the sides are enclosed, and the front is all curved. It looks like a tank with a keyboard on the front. It's really neat. The top is this big, curved, wonderful thing with just a very small opening, because you don't need all the size of the opening to accommodate big, long type bars. And there's a decal of a tiger on the tank. So I don't have a tiger in the tank, but I've got one on the tank. So, and the platen is steel. And they did that because at the time that seemed to be the best way of getting a clear impression, with the type bars just pushing against the paper and the ribbon and the platen. Later on, they changed the mechanism so they could use rubber. And there's a dial. It's a hand that you can move around that moves the platen closer and farther away. So since this is an office machine, you could do manifolding, you could make stencils. But with the dial set to the most noiseless place, the machine goes. So the shift key makes more noise than anything. Now we'll set the dial to manifolding. Now this sounds like a typewriter usually kind of sounds, only even more so. That's pretty noisy. And the bell. Come on. There's the bell. So that's the Noiseless. I got that recently from a collector in Tucker, Georgia, who is downsizing his collection. Now we get to a real surprise of a machine. Back in January, my wife and stepson were out looking for things at antique stores, and they were in the store where we found one machine, and she said, "Hey, they've got that old Remington that was here, and it's down to $35. You want it?" Well, it was at the store where we got an old Royal that I wanted, and there was a machine that I would have liked for parts, but it was around $60, and that wasn't worth it. So I figured she meant Royal instead of Remington. I mean, you know, they're both begins with R, who cares? And I said, sure. Well, so she brought the thing home, and I got home late that night and was totally blown away to see what in fact turned out to be a Remington 10, which is a machine I've read about for years and wondered what they must look like. I thought they must look even weirder than the Remington 16s or 12, and I was right. This is Remington at its most Remington. Remingtons always look sort of wild and machine-like. Well, this thing has more bells and whistles and junk on it. It's from 1915. It's the heaviest of the Remingtons I've seen. It's an amazing looking thing. You can reach all the way through and look at the works and watch everything run. And the margin stops that tell you where the end of the margin is. They not only have margin stops there, but then a second set of margin stops so that when you hit the margin release, you can only go so far. You can set how far beyond the margins you're allowed to go. Not sure what the logic was, but this is meant to be, I think, an accounting machine. So it has something to do with that. The other strange thing, the tabulator mechanism, the tab stops. There are three different types of tab stops. And so you can take them off and rearrange them so that depending on which of the five tab keys you hit, it'll stop at different points along the line. And you can arrange them so that depending on which way you have the rack that these are mounted on, depending on the way you have that set, you have a whole different combination yet again. And this rack will rotate to four different positions. So I press this little lever and turn it and like this. And so that also gives you a whole set of stops. So the way I have it set now, for example, on the row of five tab keys that make up a top row of five, I can just go right to the center of the line instead of having to go first the paragraph. I can just hit this now at the center line. And the other ones, I don't have any other ones. No, there's just a paragraph one. So I can go either paragraph, or if I start at the beginning of the line, I can go right to the center of the line. I can have any possible combinations you can imagine. Now, another weird thing about this machine is that the type bars are mounted in the old 19th century way, where they're on ball bearings, and they're big, thick type bars. They're almost rods instead of little flat things. And they didn't have room to mount them all on the same shaft, so there's two different shafts, which means there's two different lengths of type bar. And on this particular machine, it's sort of musical. Here's the top row. There's a particularly pronounced note, those guys. Now listen to the bottom row. Isn't that cool? So I've got a musical typewriter here. Okay, now on to change ringing. I'm not going to review everything I said during my last podcast, so if this leaves you a bit in the dark, I'd refer to that podcast from back in May or whenever. Since our last foray into that field, I'm definitely a live ringer. I've rung for several public performances, for a funeral, for a Sunday service or two, and my first one was our July 4th celebration, where I rang what's called a quarter peal, where they take one of those methods and by calling Bob, extending it out to where they can make it last for, in this case, just a little over 40 minutes. That means pulling the rope around 1,300 times without an accident. Mishap, let's call it. So I did that to the applause of everyone, and there were several people who accomplished firsts on that quarter peal. But it felt like ringing for about 15 minutes. I was enjoying it so much. It was really cool. But what I'm going to play for you is the first part that we did, where we did what's called calling changes. And on call changes, the caller, the conductor, instructs which bells are to change places. So when she says 2 to 3, that means, say, if I'm bell number 2, and at that point, say I've been ringing in fourth position, that means that I wait for 3 to take over fourth position, and I go to fifth position, which is a little confusing because that my number 2 came first, and it just instinctively sounds like I should somehow go earlier. But no, in our system, which is called calling up, it works that way. Now, on this one, I'm ringing the tenor bell. I'm the cover bell. I'm the bass drum. So I'm not actually participating in the call changes part. They wanted me to ring tenor and keep the rhythm going. So that's my function, is to be the drummer. So that's what you're going to hear, is our call changes session. And the nice thing about it is that there's enough space between the changes being called that you'll have a chance to hear how the bells rearrange themselves. So enjoy.
2, 2's going. Thank you. to travel.